Must I take on the responsibility of some kind of opening remarks, or does someone else want to kick this fucker off?
Oh, God.
I free associate fairly easily, you know.
What does Jabberwocky mean?
Well.
Well, I got it.
Oh my God, two at the same time.
I was going to be silly that I'm going to say what time is
it. Right. Yeah, really.
Right. Okay.
No, I was just going to. I have no direction at all. I'm pulling the thorn. I'm just like, how do you always create something so, I mean, so prolifically? I mean, you always in this creation mode. Is that just, that's not you, that's just something that happens?
He cooks every day, too.
He what? He what every day?
I think she said poops. Usually we go scatological, but it's later in the program. Yeah, it's the heat. Yeah, let's get it out of the way.
If I actually watch it, I might see myself. Exactly.
Well, every thought that you have, one has, is bountiful creation.
But it's usually so prescribed.
Well,
in postgrad.
Yeah.
Postgrad.
Yeah. I mean, thinking, whatever that implies, is a present demonstration of transcendence. Even assigning meaning to thinking, which suggests is also a demonstration of transcendence. Our samsaric error is that we miss the transcendent signature of present experience and presume we're in a realm of familiarity.
We just dive right into the content.
We dwell in or dive right into the familiarity of self thinking. Of asserting or suggesting coordinates that are binding. So, therefore, our thinking and storytelling tends to be banal. Why? We're occupied with demonstration and proliferation of transcendence, but our reflex or our conditioning is, it's just me again. So by, you could say, believing, if not wishing, that one remains in an atmosphere of familiarity, an atmosphere of context, an atmosphere of binding coordinates, as in space-time. Who you are, where you are, what's happening, how you got here, whether you're enjoying yourself or not, how soon you're going to leave, what else you got to do, what else you've done. Right? So once the once we become humorously disinterested in the movement and implication of rumination, then now you're feeling available to transcendent demonstration. Your vocabulary might shift. Your loyalty for sure will shift. This as a field of delight rather than obligation or resentment will shift. For the asking, for the taking.
It seems like there's a constant feedback loop. So you do some habitual thing that especially in along the lines of certain thought processes. And it sort of bounces. It there's immediate inertia there. There's immediate attraction to it. And whether you can say this is a function of the brain that they can see, or it's just reflected in the brain somehow, something's going on, and it's like to get to sidestep that.
Yes.
That seems to me...
That's the heart of all yoga. Yeah.
Not easy. It's simple, not easy.
Simple, not easy. So, before we're engaged in a story which suggests durability of self, the experience is occurring, you know, if that's even true, primarily as felt. You feel yourself in dynamic range, sensorially and super or subsensorially. You feel yourself as, I would say, disembodied availability with a profound dynamic range.
And is that the yoga, sort of, to just not go any further than that?
Yes. Indeed. The yoga is to discover the signature, the sigil, the texture of interest as a dynamic range that is unbound. That's why the Buddha said the great unbinding. Yeah. Now, we learn, if that's the appropriate tune, to rest in the first-hand observation and the textural, palpable sense of unconditioned space. So that window between two thoughts, however apparently brief, can become the window that we're looking out of, or the window we're looking in to. Attention, awareness, which is the primacy of your certainty, simply becomes enamored of itself, and thereby unafflicted from rumination, from content, from assignment, from the habitual or reflexive recreation of self.
This is so difficult to express to so many people, because, I mean, people automatically, if you say, hey, I have a thought, I mean, they know... They've had thoughts. They know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Or I have a feeling, you know, or an emotion or something like that.
Yeah.
But what you're talking about is not easily expressed to most people, it seems.
Well,
it's not heard, let's say.
We all do the best we can to get what it is we think we want. Right? <Yeah. laughs> Like if you want a pizza, you know, make the call. You want a patient call. Call. So your intelligence is rather elastic. You know, transcendent, not a bad word. It doesn't have to be the Groucho Marx secret word of the evening. But if you rest in availability, not conclusion, not justification. Just rest in availability. You've made the call. You've placed the call.
If they don't deliver in 30 minutes, you get a free pizza.
And if they don't deliver in 30 minutes, you actually get liberated. Yeah, it's written at the base of the Great Pyramid. If we don't deliver in 30
minutes... Harry, I hope they're late.
When thought occurs, when coordinates appear, coordinates as space, coordinates as time, coordinates as meaning, coordinates as feeling, emotional, or even sensorial, these are all coordinates. Coordinates of what? You can't say. So proliferation is at your fingertips. It's in your face for free. Delivered on time, every time, 24/7, even on Christmas.
Especially
on Christmas. So if you, whatever you might be or not be, take even the slightest break from coordinate assignment, accusation, placing yourself in any context, you have to have a confrontation, however brief or reliable, with disembodied interest. If we take ourselves as the body, and consciousness is a byproduct of body, you're not giving yourself a lot of wiggle room. Because your consciousness and or your experience, therefore, is the consequence of something else. So if your present experience is the consequence of something, you are super fucked. As a species, you will kill yourselves, all 7.3 billion of you fuckers. What strings are at your disposal that you can pull on? Well, if you go to mind, as in thought, source, causality, justification, knowledge, right? Metaphoric reference. If you go to metaphoric reference, which is the nature of rumination, then you just end up spinning like a giant cotton candy ball that never, ever, right? Just keeps adding.
You know, perhaps this is the type of mindfulness. When I've heard people say, watch the mind. It's like, watch the mind. The connotation that they're expecting, the order, if you will, is... there's this consciousness, whatever, that watches the mind?
Well, that's a good question. Doing the watching?
To me, it's like, why watch the mind?
I wouldn't waste any time watching it at all.
It's too hard to figure out.
Well, it's just a useless jumble of attention-seeking horseshit.
That's when you say, watch this, and you grab your crotch. Or
yeah, yeah. Here's your mind right here. Really, watch this instead. Well, this is interesting, you see, because watching the mind turns out to be a waste of time. Not that there is any time.
Well, it seems for me at least, just thinking for myself, all I can do is. It's just this quandary. It's like, what the hell does that even mean? You know?
Yeah.
Who is it that's watching? You know, now you can just sort of, maybe just sort of retract from the whole ball of that.
Well, good, retract. Yes.
So that's not watching the mind.
It's No.
That's the audacity to say something like, watch the mind.
Idiots. Usually Buddhists. Or Hindus. Or Course in Miracles people. I don't know. Ye gads. If somebody says, watch the mind, take your cash out of the bowl, out of the donation bowl, and get out. Leave.
Ouch.
Get out.
Is watch the mind the same as observe your thoughts? Or can you let them go by?
Well, you know, any interest at all. Well, let's look at the hierarchy of interest. What are you interested in? Body? Feeling? Sensation? Mind? Content? Context? Cause? Effect? Outcome? What do you want from your present experience? Anything? If you want something, you're toast.
Mm-hmm. That
pizza's not good. Pizza, the caveat is pizza doesn't count. Wanting pizza, wanting pizza is equivalent to liberation.
I wonder if, and I think I already knew this. If you have a concept about what you're talking, what you're saying, you feel it. If you have any kind of concept about what this person is saying, then it's going to be a problem.
Yes, it can be.
And so
right,
it becomes important, I think, to realize it's the things that, it is the presuppositions that you don't know you have.
Absolutely.
Will get you every time.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right. They will.
So you have to make sure you don't have a presupposition about what.
Well, that's the demand of jnana yoga, or the demand even of bhakti yoga, is you, by engaging in the demonstration of your present beatitude, to see what it might be suggesting, to see what it might be implying, to look at the nature of unfettered being with fresh eyes, with fresh thymus gland. That's the whole delight of the yoga. Feeling oneself.
I found it really more or less grace than I should ever see a presupposition.
Yes, it is grace
because
that
you can't see it.
It is grace that your or one's idiocy is revealed. It's absolute grace. That one might have an interest in liberation as a possibility, as a species available destination, is also grace. How many friends do we have that are like really interested in getting to the bottom of what we refer to as reality? Well, after the game, maybe. Maybe. You know. Yeah. So it's complete grace that a human being, as if there were any, is inspired to pull on the string of consciousness, pull on the string of self, and go on that adventure. Take the adventure. Find out what it is that Ramana fucking Maharshi was talking about. I mean, that doesn't mean quoting Ramana. Who gives a shit? You know, you can do who am I until the cows come home, if they ever come home. But that's nothing. Find out what Ramakrishna meant when he went into a rigor mortis and passed out. He wasn't very verbal, but you know, like, what the hell happened to that guy? You know, you're like, is that real? What? I mean, did the guy have a grand mal seizure? Or did he see the Divine Mother and just go stiff? I would want to know. You know, dear Thakur, long dead, dear Thakur, what the fuck happened to you? What were you seeing? What were you feeling? What's the nature of the experience that we're sharing so freely and demonstrably with, you know, the world at large, at least with all of his Indian pals and, you know, Dakshineswar.
It does
not really what reels you in. What reels you in is the taste that you get yourself.
Absolutely.
Not what someone supposed to be. Who cares about that?
You
hadn't had a taste of yourself.
You can't get a lot of mileage from this as a voyeur.
Well, you try.
Yeah, it'll take you so far.
You try.
It'll take you so far.
And then you realize the voyeur isn't going to get you.
No. You kind of have to be willing to find out that you are Ramakrishna, that you are Ramana Maharshi, that you are, you know, Saraswati, Christ, whoever, you know, whoever you feel like emulating that day. You are that, whatever that is. You don't necessarily have to demonstrate in the same way by wearing a diaper and petting peacocks, you know. You could be a kind of a blue-collar enlightened person. Not that person fits. You could be an ordinary, you know, uneventful, irrelevant, uninteresting, enlightened, whatever, plasma, meat puppet.
Well, kind of Mr. Ganada sort of fell into that mode.
Sure, yeah. It's just screaming at everyone. In a nice way. Well, whatever the feeling was that Ramana Maharshi, Nirsagadatta, Sailor Bob, you know, Joey Lott, don't get me started. Whatever feeling any of these folks had is this. It's exactly this. This is unbound. But as long as I'm the body thinking I'm having an experience, then it's hard to get that nuance of unbound. Because we continue to imagine that whatever we think is happening now, however we feel what might be occurring now, that it's consequential.
Would that very belief system undermine it then? I mean, just the fact that you have a belief system?
Well, having a belief system... I'm not sure if I'm eating cookie or duck. It looks like cookie, but no, I think it's probably a dead bug. It doesn't taste the same as the cookie. It's not bad, though. Here is the present, let's say, envelope demonstration of unbindable transcendence occurring to you. Ta-da! And that's always the case.
How are you ever going to find it if you're thinking it should be something more or different than this?
Yeah, you can't. You can't. You see, once rumination kicks in, which is some form of objectification by the myth of a subject, you're dreaming again. You're dreaming because you're living as a beggar through the lens of voyeuristic presumption. You know, we're not typically taught in a Judeo-Christian culture or Islamic or wherever you go that, hey, thanks for being born. You're the light of this world. Don't forget it. It's not really drilled in, is it? Hey, you're the light of this world. Far out. Take it on the road.
We're like, you're a sinner. You better repent.
Oh, man. We're beat up like crazy.
The light of this world comes from a person's mental. That's why the person
has a blessing. Oh, God, I'm sorry. I used the phrase. Oh, I don't mind, yeah. Reverend Gary Davis. Yorma Kalkanen. Light of this world. You see, before you assign yourself to a condition, to a place, to a consequence, to a plan, you're just, you're space. Pure, disembodied, euphoric availability. Pure curiosity. And wouldn't it be fun if this recognition of pure curiosity is no longer interested in anything? You're like, you turn out to be curiosity without an object. This is what Nirsagadatta was pointing out to when he said, hey, consciousness becomes interested in itself. Curiosity is curious about curiosity, and no object ever enters the field to disturb you. I mean, that is, you know, to be glib, at a minimum, that's your so-called 24/7 fact. You are of the nature of disembodied euphoria, unbindable curiosity, curious about yourself, with no object, with no conclusion, with no grasping, with no utility, no coordinates. I mean, that might please you, it might displease you. It might be something that you sound like, hey, that sounds like the shit, you know, I'd like to feel what that feels like. And you might go, oh, that's going to really mess with my life. That's going to just fuck everything up.
I'm going here now. You know,
yeah, really.
Undermining
it. Yeah. This is going to fuck everything up if I turn out to be disembodied curiosity without an object.
I just started taking the course, and now what?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But it's interesting, you know, the course and other, you know, styles spend a lot of time on objectification and explanation,
yeah.
The presumption of consequence, the presumption of genesis, what you should or shouldn't do about XYZ, why you bring the meaning to the things that are so-called meaningful to you, which is absolutely not true. But you see, once the Course starts to imply all these things, then, you know, it solidifies this transcendence as a beggar in search of.
But isn't the Course trying to undermine that as well? It seems like it is, but it just is so fucking long-winded.
Well, it all depends on the hand of the surgeon. Right? The knife doesn't heal you.
Yeah.
The surgeon does. I'm being, you know, taking liberties. The Course doesn't heal you. It's the one who might be wielding it. Right? Conveyance of transcendence is what this is all about. Non-stop. Now, is it conveyance from one to another? No! That's bullshit. The conveyance is, transcendence is conveying itself to itself. That's, you could say that's the, you know, that's the hand of the master.
My frustration, speaking of the Course, I mean, the frustration with the Course is that there's every opportunity that you leap into the stratosphere.
Dumb fuck idiots are teaching the Course.
It never happens. It no. never
It can't.
Happens.
It can't. Dumb fuck idiots are teaching the Course from the point of view of causality. They can come up with as many brilliant, you know, references as possible, but it will not penetrate. Is there something to let go of? No. Is there someone to let go of and not something that there is not to let go of?
Wait.
No.
Do that again. Is there something to do? Is there someone to do it? Is there anybody who cares?
Is there anybody in there?
Hopefully not.
Hello, is there anybody in there? Knock if you can hear me. Is there anyone at home? Relax. for as long as we are inspired to heal, we suffer. It's unavoidable. You could say that's why revelation does the healing. Because it could turn out to be a gradual or cathartic or both insight into basic space, into unconditioned space, into disembodied curiosity that has no object. Feel it again, kick it around, forget it, feel it, get angry with it. Be condemning, self-condemning, condemning of others. Be retributional. Raise your fist in the air. You know, knock yourself out. You're not now in a place. You're not now in a body. Transcendent curiosity. Transcendent curiosity is immersive. Why? Cool. Well, because it loves itself. You know, it's like, oh shit, this is transcendent curiosity. I'm never leaving. Nothing in the world of, you know, primates can compare to this, can compete with this. But still, you might like your pasta al dente. Mm-hmm. 24/7, the revelation of being is in your face. Being, not necessarily us, being is somehow magically imbued with an incredible capacity for self-obscuration. No one knows why. Why would this transcendent miracle, unbound, unafflicted, generous, beyond imagination, find itself in such a clusterfuck of selfishness?
Fine.
What the fuck? But, and it appears to. For whose pleasure? You can't say. Rumination of itself is not a problem, but rumination as the contour and implication of self creates the sense of congestion, malnourishment, lack of creativity, victimization, vulnerability, at-riskness.
Incompleteness.
Yeah.
About creating the clusterfuck of selfishness.
It's all the same. It's all the same. Yeah. Identification. As a corporeal constituent, other than the fundamental transcendence, is a panic. It's total panic. everyone's wearing all these smiling faces, trying to pretend that they're not in a panic. And it looks like, let's say you go to Salt Lake City, you know, and you get swarmed by a couple of missionaries. It may look like they're not in a panic. Whether through Jesus, Brigham, Joseph, Macumba, you know, Saint Germain, it may look like if you're rolling in a demonstrable belief system, that can appear, and I'm always enviable of the people for whom it works, that, you know, fear at riskness is dissipated. If you're born again, it's possible that it poofs out.
It seems like the trouble is that there's this object of that, and so this belief, this utter trust in it, so often falls away, and then one is left with a crisis, you know. And so as soon as you put your trust and your faith and all that in something, well, there's some vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be.
Feels good for a while.
Yeah.
To your core, it's a manic person. It's just like falling in love.
Oh, that's like the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know. It's just like a baseball game. Three strikes here.
Well, you know, you can look at the sociologists, the anthropologists, the psychiatrists, right? All of these, you could say, incredible, sincere, thoughtful disciplines that have a lot to say about the human condition.
A lot.
And they don't stop.
And I think this week there was some issue with... couldn't replicate certain psychology research experiments, so it, which is,
have things changed?
So some former expert turned out to be a plagiarist or goober?
I just kind of read a headline, but it just said something like psychology in jeopardy because they can't replicate
psychology's in jeopardy, yeah. God, don't tell that to Alex Trebek.
He downgraded as a pseudoscience for two of us.
Big surprise,
right?
Scientology
be like,
yeah. Oh, yeah, really. Scientology comes out winning. Really. David Miscavige was right.
Sliced your mouth. You get it pulled off.
Tear it.
It looks pretty luscious.
Ooh, cheesy sticks with dipping sauce. Now we're talking. That other shit was kind of boring, but this.
There's no time to taste.
The winning formula. So, rumination hooks your interest. It's really that simple. Rumination as implication, source, genesis, consequence, outcome, hooks your interest. Rumination by itself is nothing at all. It only appears to have implication when interest shines a light on it.
Any interest will do.
Any interest will do. That's right.
It seems to be in your favor.
Oh, absolutely.
Really,
yeah.
Gets what really.
Yep. Yeah. Isn't it funny that your own psyche is better than just about anybody at pushing your own buttons? You know how to drive yourself crazy better than anyone.
Yeah.
Sure. Even when you're aware of it going down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right.
That's what gets me. I know what's happening, and I'm still like.
Yeah.
Just along for the ride, you know.
Yeah. So the yogas, when they're good yogas, are all about engaging the capacity to disengage from rumination. Disengage from the implication of discursive pageantry.
Well, is the various forms of yoga, guided meditation, anything that has a mantra, you know, just like sort of a halfway step to get there. You know, it's like, well, at least this is training for getting all that other stuff out of the way.
Well, you could say everything is that. I mean, this never ceases being a transcendent field of nothing at all.
But there's this discipline that's going on. And maybe if you learn the discipline in one place...
You could wake up repairing a motorcycle. Send in the art of motorcycle maintenance.
Yes.
Right? I mean, in that respect, you know, let's say our aperture of understanding softens or is more elastic. Everything's yoga. Everything is the demonstration of transcendent liberation. You're loaded with strings. Pull on any string. Pull on the senses, themselves. Pull on the, you know, that the senses are appearing. Pull on that. Pull on the objects appearing in the senses. Pull on the consciousness. Pull on the mood. Yeah, you're being given, more or less, it's raining liberation. 24/7, it's fucking raining liberation. But we objectify and get accustomed to, oh, I'm a body. Oh, I'm a person. Oh, I'm at risk. Oh, this is about me. Oh, I better plan. I better make sure that I don't come to harm.
That's some junky ass food, by the way.
Is
it? It's good, though. In a good way.
Like
pizza donuts.
Discovering that awareness, curiosity, and availability are your principal nature, organically creates space so that the reflex of identifying with rumination, with discursive thought, with body, with emotion, with circumstances and events starts to open. Then you'll be treated to curious presentations of being coordinate free. Could be here. Wegmans, Panera, Highway, waking up, falling asleep, TV, anger, closet, dry cleaner. As there's an organic relaxation from the insistence on coordinates, then this presents to you spacious, open, object and subject free. As that, you could say, builds momentum, like making a really excellent snowman with that perfectly sticky snow. Mm-hmm. Right? You take a little snowball, you throw it, you start rolling it. Before you know, you got a 12-foot monster with a carrot nose. Right? Similarly, basic space, unconditioned space, is like that. All you need is just a little taste. Just a little taste, and it'll just turn into a, you know, giant snowman with raisin eyes and a little cap.
And branches.
And branches for arms, yeah. And part of the so-called yoga, the adventure of all this, is to become accustomed to the sensation of the aperture opening. We tend to kind of shy away from the demonstration of spaciousness. And we go back to the habit of filling ourselves with content and coordinates. Because we think we're safe in the hysteria of content and coordinates. Whoa! So if this says, hey, you're nothing at all, you're like, you know, become avoidant. Yeah, so part of the yoga or the maturing process or, you know, the unfolding of curiosity is to actually recognize the felt sense of absolute spaciousness and not recoil.
It seems like you're in the middle of a magnetic field and one false move and then boom. You're
pinned to
the wall.
Yep, I love it. Yep, pinned again. Oh!
Man, all I did was think, oh.
Yeah, really. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. But you see, it's interesting. When we report, which is always in the present, when we're reporting in the present on something that's other than present, we're manufacturing, right, what we thought was the nature of experience and or the consequence of that experience.
Yeah, if we would jump into time, we'd say we're perpetuating.
That's right. That's right. That's how discursive seduction perpetuates. Yeah. Yeah. It's like you have to be willing to be overwhelmed with delight. We think we want to get high or liberated or some such spiritual shit. But it's like you have to build up some chops to cope with being absolutely consumed with delight. That's why for those folks where some kind of shift in consciousness happens rather suddenly, you know, it can be a really disorienting ride. It was like the whole, you know, call it energy body, just exploded into a million pieces, never to be put back together ever again. And like, I'm going under the covers. I don't know what just happened. Right?
Well, do you think it makes it easier to have more, you know, credence towards
clear water?
Well, just say somebody has some sort of experience out of the blue.
Yeah.
That it would feel like, oh, wow, something substantial has happened where as if it's more little by little, then you wouldn't necessarily
notice. Yeah, but you'll notice.
The radical one would...
Uh-huh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. You know, this discovering itself can creep up on itself, or it can just, you know, get headbutted. Someone like John Klein, you know, who was deep into Kashmiri philosophy and yoga and was working with the, you know, teacher that knew his way around the bull pen, the bull ring. You know, he had a gradual kind of effervescence. So when something shifted and his identity field changed, it was like, you know, but of course. But he also referred to that in other, you know, talks and presentations. That it is an explosion in the mind. You know? Okay.
It's just very matter of fact about the explosion, I guess.
Absolutely. Restlessness is just a word for evasion. We're evading sensation, feeling. We're evading the hysteria that we've conjured a moment ago because we don't like where we're going, where it's going, somatically or otherwise. So we end up in some kind of what appears to be a constant state of evasion, you know, and or amelioration seeking, which is just more evasion. Psychological time, no matter what the object of delight might be, whether it's an avoidant motivation or whether it's a, right, acquisitive, right? What did the Buddha say? Da-da-da-da-da-da, craving and aversion, right? So deferral, avoidance, whether it's motivated by craving or aversion, is it's the same. But, you know, then the Buddhists go and say, well, you should not have craving or aversion, which is fucking stupid. Worse than stupid.
Don't think that. Should not.
You know what I mean? Because craving and aversion are just the organic compounds associated with, we could say, a much deeper, more fundamental or embedded mystery, which is that identification occurs at all. Craving and aversion are not a problem. Trying to be rid of craving and aversion is absurd.
Well, and especially if somebody says, hey, stop that. What the hell does that do? You know?
Nothing. Yeah, right.
But the recognition of it gets you something, but I don't know. It's still, there it is. You know, the creation, you know, it's still a factor. Seems like no matter what.
Bodhicitta replaces identification.
What's bodhicitta?
Bodhicitta is radiant mind. The recognition of radiant mind as the presence of a creative field, transcendent creative field, will assist you in weaning yourself from discursive identification.
Craving and aversion.
Yes, and will also release you from, let's just say, the consequence of so-called craving and aversion?
Well, I know that I automatically revert to this notion that I just got to get some things together and things will work.
Fair enough. Yeah.
It's like I know that I'm doing that, and I just keep doing it.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
get a couple things straightened out.
Well, can you see for fun this rhythm that appears in your experience, perhaps in a repetitive manner, as nothing at all?
Can I see it as nothing at all?
Well, you see, it's the objectification of it that also suggests you as a durable agent.
How many times are you going to do it before you realize it's a little bullshit?
100,000.
You know?
Yeah, and we're not suggesting that it should cease even. The happiest day of your life is when the person you care the least about turns out to be you.
Right, not a lot of investment there.
You see, it's the caring, the investment, the micromanagement, the control drama,
yeah.
Of that your experience should be somehow different, and that you're on the hook, responsibly or otherwise, to make sure that that occurs. That's too much interest in yourself.
It doesn't seem to have legs anyway. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't motivate you. It doesn't change you.
It doesn't.
Something better or something like that.
No, it never will.
You have all those feelings. You could have guilt or what have you.
Yes.
But when has that worked for anybody?
It hasn't done a damn thing. It doesn't do a damn thing for anyone. Even if, let's say, all of this internalized rage and disappointment and resentment ends up as liver cancer and then takes you out,
yeah.
It still didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. You know, with all due respect to Louise Hay. Is the irrefutable wonderment that presence is present the consequence of anything?
I sure can't put a finger on it.
And yet purses fall from the sky.
It might be part of the difficulty when, let's say, you get the taste of openness. Part of the difficulty with being comfortable with it is absolutely everything you ever believed. Not true.
Yeah, that sounds like a happy moment.
You might be like, motherfucker, you know?
Yeah, you sure could. You might choke on a cheesy bread.
Totally inconsequential.
Isn't it interesting that from moment to moment you can bask in the glory of being inconsequential? The moment we want to be consequential, which could include adjusting our behavior, adjusting our experience, you're fucked. You're back under the influence of imaginary coordinates. That's how quickly it asserts. This proliferation is faster than you. Smarter than you. It's got more tricks than you. You can't outwit it. So you have to see it in its entirety. You have to see it. Jean Clown used to refer to it geometrically. Another useful metaphor might be, you see the radiant inclusivity of all proliferation, and it dawns on you that you are not going to outsmart that fucker. But you don't have to continue to be a consequence of it. If we're engaged in trying to outsmart ourselves or our behavior or our, you know, disappointments or our thirst for liberation, then the loop of consequence and the loop of relevance remains alive and well. And the loop of consequence and the loop of relevance also contains the aversive and the, what's that other word? Craving. But it also includes the aversive and craving self. Most New Age folks traveling in New Age circles want a certain kind of ideal experience to occur to them as the person, as the body, as the compilation of psychiatric perfume. They want their experience to look and feel a certain way, to go winning. But as long as we're interested in any suggestion of winning, we, in a sense, condemn ourselves unintentionally to that loop of relevance and consequence.
It's another word you use, which I can kind of go for, but I think maybe acquiring, because they think they can acquire something.
Yes. Right. And the sense of self, individuated self, being of the nature of a reliable durability, meaning, it's going to be you 5 minutes from now. It's going to be you that finally hits the sack and say, can't wait to forget that day. Right? We think that because this is so persistent, as in transcendently persistent, that our sense of identity is likewise persistent, as if something happened to you prior to this moment. And thinking that you were somewhere prior to this moment suggests that you're likely to be somewhere after this moment. And so we carry, again, kind of unwittingly, the abstract notion of personal durability. When the actuality of experience is evaporative. And yet, that there's this curious interface or enjoyment or horror or panic or whatever with the strange persistent nature of experiencing itself makes it seem like I'm the one doing the experiencing. But each moment is an absolute refresh, down to the quark, of the entirety of the apparitional nature of phenomena. It's a complete refresh, down to the quark, if not the Higgs, of the miracle of transcendent experiencing itself. And if nothing need be derived from it, best fucking train ride I've ever been on. Toot toot! Ivyland, here we come. We're leaving New Hope because we're done with hope. We're heading for Ivyland. The Eden of Bucks County. So you relax from any hint of craving, any hint of arriving, any hint of destination, any hint of aversion, And you can see, without effort, because obviously you can't lift a finger to do a goddamn thing. But you recognize your radiant nature, your transcendent nature, as disembodied availability, disembodied euphoria, unbound. Holy shit. And all of this experiencing crap is its problem. Mm-hmm. It's not your problem anymore. That experiencing appears to be ongoing. That's wild freedom. Not the body, not the gender, not the race, not the color, not the religion, not the accumulator of clothing. Shoes. Well, shoes are like pizza. That's okay. Pizza's cool. Shoes are cool. That you can't suffer by eating pizza or buying shoes. I'm telling you, they're safe and clear. It's in the Old Testament. Imelda Marcos, she knew that. She'd read that. She'd read that one, and she just went. She went off the deep when it came to the shoes. These can't hurt me. These can't hurt me. I have the problem with pizza. This can't hurt me. This can't hurt me. Uh-huh. Free ride to her coronary. Not a coronation. A coronary. Although the coronation comes when you flatline. Then you get a coronation.
Perhaps.
Right. Plenty of flowers.
And no flowers.
Plenty of flowers at the funeral home. That's the coronation. Post-coronary. All the result of pizza and shoes, which you thought were a free ride.
Where is your life? Phew. Like letting it happen.
Isn't it fun? Experience can, it is, so is what it is, and thank goodness for that. But whatever this is or isn't, your concern.
I think loitering is just an awesome preparation for whatever problems.
Yeah, yeah, loitering is good. Yeah.
Well, I've never cultivated it in my life. So.
Yeah, see, when we were in high school, you know, smoking a doobie, playing handball, drinking a beer, you know, stuff like that. We learned how to loiter. We were chilling, right? We were hanging, we were loitering, you know. Someone bagged an ounce. Thumbs up. And then, as so-called adults, curiously identified with the vicissitudes of making a living, the beauty of loitering somehow left our field of experience. So, the smart way back is loiter again. Bring back the loitering. You know, go to work, figure it out. But when you have some available time, loiter it up. Fuck off. And let everyone else know, of course, all your dear friends, that they should do the same. Hey, Bobby, hey, fuck off. Super Bill. Hey, Sharon, good to see you. Hey, fuck off. Absolutely. Bring back the loitering, the love of loitering. Mm-hmm. You feel the shining, and you become accustomed to the shining. You learn, you could say, how to trust the shining.
It just came to me that just came up in my head.
As it will.
What the fuck came up? So, who you are actually can't want it. I mean, the
right. Yeah.
The apparitional self actually cannot want it.
No, no, no. I wouldn't go near this with a 10-foot pole or a cheesy stick.
Yeah.
It wouldn't go near this. Yeah. The apparitional self is just not interested in its own demolition.
You think that if you're like the Elephant Man or something, it doesn't really torture existence or something.
Well, wanting, you know, cessation of life because of one or a thousand forms of tortured existence might be a little different than the curiosity of liberation. Might be. I'd have to talk to the Elephant Man to find out what was on his elephant mind. I wonder if he had a really good memory. You were going there, right? The Elephant Man never forgets.
Good testing.
It's, you know, we can hang out for whatever this so-called amount of time is, and no one has gotten into a story about self. Really, that's fucking weird. Adults, creative, engaged, thoughtful, sensitive, curious about the world even, could hang out, and nobody had to go down the path of self.
Out loud.
Out loud.
Let me tell you about the time.
It really is a relief. It is a palpable, constructive relief. To be free from the assertion of self. Or what it is you think happened to you. Or what it is you hope might happen to you. Or what it is you need to heal from. I mean, that's a gift.
And that's why we keep coming back.
Most of our indulgence, either internally or with others, is, right, usually to be politically, intimately correct, including the workplace or the red nurse, is to engage with others as self. I mean, Redders doesn't have a sign that says disembodied angels not allowed.
They wouldn't dare.
Wegmans doesn't have a sign that says disembodied angels not allowed, which means you're free to come and go as you please, just about anywhere you want to go. Radiant presence is real. Radiant presence is the nature of this. Your somatic presence occurs at the request of, at the pleasure of radiant presence. Mind and emotion and story and memory, coordinates, all appear at the pleasure of radiant presence. Leave yourself alone. What does Paul Hederman say? Any questions?
Yeah, that's right.
Really?
He does.
No? Good.
A bit of a relief, it seems like, when he does.
The appearance of self alternates. Live in duality. And
yes.
So I think this duality
the appearance of self is synonymous, implies duality.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's limited.
It's the apparition of limitation appearing in the unlimited.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the apparition of limited, say, what I said a minute ago, absolutely cannot go there. Can't. It only knows duality.
The symptom can't know the ailment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look at the nature of presently appearing proliferation. Non-stop, acausal, without genesis, not made of anything, not appearing to anyone, having no consequence. Mad with itself.
Far out, man.
Rock and roll. Yum. Well, we pretty much cleared the room, eh? Thanks for coming. Thank you at home. Good night.